Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Where were you 25 years ago today?
I never meant to call you when you sorrow.
Hardly seems possible. A quarter century ago, the man formerly known as Rogers Nelson, Prince, released Purple Rain, the film and the movie, and it rocketed to the top, changed the 80s forever, and created a new kind of style that really defined the 80s. Purple Rain. What do you think of the album? What was your relationship to it if you were kicking around back in the 80s? Joining us to talk about Purple Rain is Brian Raftery, contributing writer for Spin Magazine. He's in the studio. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's just listen to that Purple Rain for a second and just get suffused with that, Dylan. So what do you make of this album 25 years hence?
Well, it's pretty amazing to listen to it now. I think the conventional wisdom would be that some people still see Prince as an 80s artist because that was when his main sort of fame was. But it doesn't sound like an 80s record to me when I put it on. I mean, maybe I'm biased because I played it for years and years. But, I mean, what he was doing there by combining rock and synthesizer and R&B, no one's really tried to do that since. And he did it so well and was doing so many different parts of so many different forms of music, that it never really sounded outdated. It sounds pretty fresh.
And by the time of Purple Rain, Prince was a well-established artist who grew up in the Twin Cities music scene, which was an incredible scene. Describe that scene that he and a lot of artists came from at a time when, you know, music was dominated by acts in Hollywood and New York.
Well, yeah, I mean, Minneapolis kind of became this focal point. I mean, you had, on one hand, you had Prince and the Time and this really emerging funk rock scene where they're throwing a lot of synthesizers into sort of conventional R&B songs. And on the other hand, at the same time, you had the Replacements and Husker Du on the sort of other side of
right.
the musical spectrum. So I don't think a lot of people in the 80s were thinking, boy, I really have to go to Minneapolis to check out the music scene. But after Purple Rain came out, and then once you had the Replacements coming in toward like the mid to late 80s, it became a very, very big musical city.
I actually did a radio story on that scene. It was surprising to me. Prince's gang would go to the Replacements concerts and clubs, and they all knew each other. It was a very tight scene and incredibly creative.
It is, though. It's strange to me still there's never been a sort of a bootleg of like the Replacements and Prince jamming, and that which would have been amazing to hear at one point.
Amazing. All right, let's hear some other cuts from Purple Rain. Dylan, just to cue one up and fire it. You know, there's a range of pop and rock stylings on this record. Describe the diversity that you really hear.
Well, you have everything. I mean, When Doves Cry, in a way, is kind of a perfect example. It sort of opens with that very psychedelic guitar riff.
Hendrix-like.
Yeah, very Hendrix-like. And then the rest of the song has this great sort of staccato dance beat, but it's a number one dance song that doesn't have a bass line, mm-hmm. which is amazing. I mean, no one's ever really done that since. And the whole album sort of dips into all these different phases. I mean, there's this Purple Rain, in a way, is almost like a country song. It's just a big,
right.
emphatic ballad that could be, you know, you don't need any production on that whatsoever.
Does it remind you, it reminds me of Sgt. Pepper in a sense that it represents this incredibly coherent, creative statement of a band and takes, you know, like Sgt. Pepper did, the Beatles, way beyond these musicians and really creates a kind of style consciousness that Prince really was known for ever since.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And also, you know, as a concept album, it really is telling the story of the movie. I mean, obviously the movie accentuates the, you know, the movie's about Prince playing someone who is not technically Prince, but who sings like Prince, talks like Prince, comes from Prince's same hometown, and is trying to make it in the music scene. And a lot of the songs are just telling that story chronologically through the album, which is
And there's
cool.
a lot of history. I mean, Darling Nikki was the album,
yeah.
the cut that inspired Tipper Gore to go to Congress and get song lyrics.
Yeah, I guess she bought the record for her daughter and had no idea that Prince was in any way scandalous, which at that point is kind of amazing to think that she didn't realize that a guy who'd been walking around half naked for the first 3 years of the 80s might put out a record that might not be entirely appropriate for an 11-year-old.
But. Right. What about the success of the movie? It made $80 million.
Yeah.
It's really it's a dreadful movie in the same way that kind of the Beatles movies were sort of dreadful, but you didn't care. You forgave that because it was a part of the immersion in Prince-ness.
Well, I mean, I never saw it as dreadful. I mean, and again, I had to watch it many, many times recently for the story I did. But, you know, the concert scenes, the concert footage is spectacular.
No, it is.
And it opens with those notes from Let's Go Crazy, and he's on stage, and you know, my wife had never seen it until a couple months ago, and she watched it and got completely entranced. I mean, granted, the love story is a little hokey, but there's some really interesting, weird things in that movie. I mean, Prince is having this very volatile relationship with Apollonia, and, you know, he wasn't a big star. You know, this movie basically was about a jerk. I mean, a guy, a really talented jerk, and for Prince to put himself out there was really risky. Not everyone knew who he was yet.
One sign that this is a really powerful character comes from the Dave Chappelle show. Listen to this. So here's Dave Chappelle playing Prince in a classic basketball scene.
Shoot the J. Shoot it! Just run a play. Computer blue. Darling picky.
Prince, you got a towel, man? It's kind of hot out here, man.
Why don't you purify yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka? Gay. Blouses.
A towering classic character worthy of parody.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, everyone has stories like that about Prince. I mean, like, you know, it's like after Purple Rain came out, there's a story of one person I interviewed for this piece was talking about how, you know, he wanted to go get his hair cut. And for Prince to get his hair done, it didn't mean just having someone come in. He had to go find a salon, rent it out, black out the windows, have security, make sure no one else is there. And, you know, he's always been Prince. I mean, he's a very eccentric character.
And in many ways, the story of Prince was just beginning. Brian Raftery, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Raftery, contributing writer for Spin Magazine. The current issue has his story about Purple Rain, released 25 years ago today. Album and the movie. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.